There was a request, or someone told me of a request by someone doing a PhD or something on emptiness. And I was too busy to respond to that call at the time. Well, somebody passed it to somebody else. So I haven't given a talk on emptiness for quite a while. So this evening's talk will be on emptiness. But I often thought that the person doing the PhD on the subject of emptiness, he should just hand in a few blank pages. See if his professor had a sense of humor. It reminded me of the story I remember a long time ago when I was a kid, of this school kid who had an art assignment, and he handed in a blank piece of paper for his art assignment. He's supposed to paint a picture. So the teacher of art at school said, "What's this?" And he calls it, "I call this cow eating grass, sir." And he said, "Well, where's the grass?" "Cow has eaten it, sir." "Well, where's the cow?" "He's gone into the next field to get some more." So you can have a lot of fun with the idea of emptiness and blankness, but it's something which is quite profound in Buddhism, in meditation, in life. But it's also something which it relates to, you know, the ordinary person's experiences of life. Because there are times in one's life when one feels empty in a negative state, negative sense. You may have lost a child, or you may have lost, you know, a dear partner you've loved for a long time. And people say they feel empty without that person. Or you may have other sort of losses and tragedies in life which make you feel the sense of loss. And you may have lost your job, you may have lost your money in the financial crisis, or whatever else, you know, you feel you've lost. And that loss means you feel a sense of emptiness, something was there and now it's missing. And we look upon this in a very negative way. And it's as if that those things which you needed to give you a meaning or give you happiness have been taken away. And you feel that that's a negative. However, in the spiritual path, whenever you lose something, whenever it's been taken away, there's also a sense of freedom, like a burden has been discarded. You've moved on beyond and past those attachments which have stopped you being free. Which is why that, you know, as a Buddhist monk, you know, you have so few things, and those few things give you a very more powerful meaning of emptiness. Recently talking at a school, the kids were asking the usual questions of, you know, why do you have, you know, brown robes on? It's just because you don't have to wash them so often, that's the only reason. They're very practical and simple, you only have one set, so you don't have to have a big wardrobe in your house. And I mean, it's people, some people have walk-in wardrobes, and sometimes their wardrobes are bigger than the cave in which I live. What do you want all those clothes for? So, fashion. Isn't it terrible to have to live by fashion? Monks' robes and nuns' robes. 2,500 years they haven't changed yet. Isn't that wonderful and peaceful? And just the simple lifestyle which we have. We wear robes because they're simple. And we have few possessions, no money because it's simple. I live in a cave because it's simple. And I always remind myself just of the emptiness of that simplicity. There's hardly anything there. And that gives you a lot of peace and freedom. So when you lose things, you say, wow, now I can move closer towards this beautiful simplicity, the freedom of emptiness. So when something is missing or taken away from you in life, it's another way of looking at it. You're moving closer to the beautiful simplicity and freedom which simplicity gives you. We do live a very complicated life. And just even going into people's houses, you've got so many furnishings in your room. Sometimes I wonder how you ever clean your house up. I think probably you never do. There's too many things to move. There's too much stuff. What do you want all that stuff for? Well, the first story about emptiness, which I mentioned somewhere recently, but I don't think it was here, was the simile of my mother's mantel shelf. Her mantel shelf was this old, in these old English houses, was a shelf which was above the fireplace, the hearth, the center of her home. And on that shelf above the fireplace, you'd have all the most important possessions, such as your photographs and other knick-knacks. And of course, you know, my mother was living in London and I was here in Australia. And so the first time I went to visit her, you know, you have to bring your mother something. Somebody offered me a little fluffy kangaroo doll. And so I took it to my mother. You know, here's something from Australia, a little kangaroo. And she appreciated it and put it on her mantelpiece to remind her of me. And of course, a few years later, I went back again to visit her. She already had a kangaroo. This time someone gave me a koala toy. So I gave the koala to my mother, and she put it on the mantel shelf left next to the koala. And the next time, I managed to get a kookaburra. And the fourth time, somebody, what else can you get? I got a wombat. A nice little toy wombat, nice and fluffy and cute and cuddly. And as soon as I gave it to my mother, she tried to put it on her mantel shelf, next to all the other stuff. And of course, by this time, the shelf was so full of not just what I'd bought her, but my brother bought her and other knick-knacks from her travels. And she started to put the wombat on the shelf, and the kangaroo and koala fell off. And so she tried to put the koala and the kangaroo back up there, and some other letters and photographs fell off. And I told my mother, look, why not throw away the koala, the kangaroo and the kookaburra and just have the new toy on there? No, I can't. These are all important. These are all important to me. They remind me of wonderful things. And because she kept on trying to put the wombat on top, things were always falling off. It was my simile for a nervous breakdown. You got one more thing and then things start tumbling out of your mind and it gets all a mess. Why do people want to fill up things so much and have so much stuff on their shelf? If that was my shelf, I'd have to have one shelf. And when somebody brought me something, I'd put the wombat on top. And then when someone else brought me something else, I'd throw the wombat away and put something else on there. Isn't that a much more sensible way of living a life? Just like you have one partner in life, one wife, she dies. So clean it off the shelf and put another one. Can you do that? Why not? Why do you always want to amass things? And it's strange that sometimes the emptiness makes people very afraid. You've always noticed in life, whenever somebody climbs up a mountain, what do? They put a flag on top of that mountain. They can't leave it empty and free. Even when they went to the moon, they put flags on top of the moon. Can't you leave it empty? Of course, the next stage, after you put a flag on top of the mountain, the next thing you'd put up there is a restaurant. We can't leave anything alone, even the most beautiful parts of the world. You know, we tend to mess up. And also, we have things like our houses. Again, going to people's houses, why do we always keep putting things in the corner? I mentioned this simile at our retreat center on the opening. Because, you know, I designed that meditation center, and especially, you know, the meditation hall. I had to fight to make sure there was no windows, just clean walls. And I left it up there, just to have this very empty meditation retreat center, the meditation hall. So it's so simple, there's nothing there to distract you. And of course, before I knew it, there was a flower pot in every corner with flowers. If I'm not vigilant, if I go away, I'm sure there'll be pictures on the walls. And after pictures on the walls, there'll be tables with other knick-knacks on there. Why is it we can't leave things free? Why is it you have a room in your house and you always put things in it? Wouldn't it be wonderful to have one room in your house which was totally empty? Nothing there. Just to remind you of simplicity and freedom. It is as if we're afraid of emptiness. And there is a reason for that. Because when there's emptiness and freedom, there's clarity. And sometimes that clarity is actually scary. Because we are actually seeing a truth. We're seeing a freedom. We're seeing something which is much deeper than normal. And many of us aren't ready for that yet. One of the greatest symbols of emptiness, which is an old story, which was in Opening the Door of Your Heart. Again, just these are stories from my own life, ways of reflecting on ordinary experiences and taking them to another level. And that was a story when, as an 18-year-old, I managed to get myself just traveling through the United States and getting very bored because the United States was no different than the places where I grew up in. This is only a slightly different culture. And I was always fascinated with more indigenous cultures. So hitchhiked down through Central America. I went up into the jungles of Guatemala. I was heading for these ancient pyramid ruins in the Yucatan Peninsula of the Mayan Indians. They disappeared and no one knew why they disappeared. And they left only a scant amount of records, carvings or paintings on these old temple walls. But these pyramids were very, very impressive. And so I managed to find my way to visit one of these great pyramid sites in the town of Tikal, in the heart of the jungles of Guatemala. But before I say what happened when I found that site, I have to say that it took me 3 days from Guatemala City to reach this site. Today, tourists go there in half an hour on an aircraft. But to me, I had to go on buses and boats up rivers, and on the back of trucks, on all sorts of transport to get to this site. Because this was in 1969, 40 years ago now, remember the date. And by the time I got there, the place, there was no one around. So I saw one of these pyramids and decided to climb up it. And when I got to the top, I had an insight, understood what those pyramids were there for. Because for 3 days of traveling, if you travel through jungles, especially those days, the tracks are always single track, just carved out of the jungle. And after probably only a few weeks, the trees, the vines, the bushes, they grow over the road. I was traveling through tunnels, even on the rivers. You're just traveling through a tunnel of green. For 3 days, I had not seen the horizon. And now, in the middle of the jungle, I climbed up this pyramid. When I got to the top, it was just above the tree line. And at the top, for the first time in 3 days, I could see infinity in all directions, with nothing between me and the ultimate. It was empty all around. All the things, the jungle in which I traveled in for 3 days, was now below me. There was an amazing sense of freedom, of space, and understanding of why those pyramids were built in the first place. I hadn't got a guidebook. I wasn't an anthropological expert. Can't even say that word properly. But you had a feeling of what it would have been like. What it would have been like for someone who'd not just spent 3 days in the jungle, but someone born in the jungle, grew up in the jungle, spent all their life in that deep forest. and one day they were taking up one of those pyramids for the first time, taken to the top, where they could see like I was seeing, infinity in all directions, with nothing between you, and the ultimate, space, as far as the eye could see. That would blow their mind. That would give them an understanding of the spiritual element of their life, the beautiful emptiness which embraces everything. And in their emptiness above the jungle, you could look down. You could look down, I could see the route in which I'd come that day from the town of Flores, this little island in the middle of a lake. And I could see that in the distance. And I realized that this is what the experience of emptiness is like. You're free, unentangled by the jungle of the concerns of your life. No past, no future, no concerns, no worries, no entanglements, because that's what a jungle is like. Just trees and bushes and vines all tangled up together. Now you're free of that. Above, looking down, you can see the plan of life, the place where you live, and all the things which you do, standing above and beyond in the emptiness, looking down, you can understand your place in the jungle we call life, and how to be free of that for a while, in the beautiful emptiness, where there's no past and no future and no thoughts and nothing at all. Yeah, it can be scary, but it's so freeing. Sometimes the religions, they have something or someone between you and the infinite. A god, a priest, a Jesus, a prophet or whatever. But isn't it wonderful not to have anything at all between you and ultimate truth? Just emptiness as far as you can see. That's wonderful. And it also shows that why we have monks and nuns with few possessions. Why we don't collect things? Because the more we collect, the more we're blocking up that vision and experience of emptiness. It seems the more things we have, the less we can experience that freedom. And I'm not just talking with physical possessions. We start with physical possessions. We can all live more simply. That's why we can welcome the recession. Hooray, bring it on. So I don't have to have so much stuff. You've got an excuse to use old clothes, or an old car, or even no car at all. So it's wonderful to be simple. You find you have much more freedom that way, as you come closer to the emptiness. But it's not just physical possessions. The most cluttering things which we have, of course, are mental possessions. All those things which we hang on to, just like in that mantel shelf of my mother, all those past memories, good and bad, which we collect inside of ourselves. As I mentioned, that in my mantel shelf, in my mind, I can put a koala on there, throw it away and have a kangaroo tomorrow. It's always empty to be able to receive the next gift. You find that when you attach and carry around the past, you're not free to enjoy the present. Because we are prisoners of the pain of our past. Someone may have hurt you, abused you, cheated you, given you a hard time. Until we can let that go, to clear it off our mantel shelf called our memory, we are not free to have something else come into our heart and into our mind. The past is what imprisons us. If we can find that emptiness, so the past is emptied out, always free to enjoy the present. And why do we, if we let go of the past, why do we always keep worrying about what's going to happen in the future? Then again, we're filling up this moment with worrying about what we want next. There's a saying which I was impressed with. This is not a Buddhist saying. I forget what philosopher or what author said this. He said, whenever you want more money, you can't enjoy the money you have now. And it's not just money. That's what he said. Whenever you want more of anything, you can't enjoy what you have in this moment. It is the wanting, the craving, stops you appreciating where you've come. It's as if you've been on a journey and you just can't stop. You always want the next destination. And sometimes that's what our life is like. A journey with no end. Or walking with no stops. Which is why we feel ever so tired. However, if one is not looking for the future, is not lingering in the past, but one empties the mind from time to time of future and past, there's an enormous amount of freedom there. It's like having a house, your inner house, your inner home, where you're throwing away all of the old stuff, and you're not allowing any new stuff to come into your house. You're just enjoying what you already have. And what do you have now? What's your only possession? The present moment. Now is the only thing you own. Going for the future is like going into debt. Lingering on the past is just like carrying old coffins. Present moment is this beautiful time when we can start to experience emptiness. When a person understands this spiritual power of the present moment, understand this is emptiness. As the Buddha was explaining it when he gave the talk about the emptiness, he said, monks, whenever you are practicing emptiness, you'd always remember, empty of what? Of what's missing. When we look at what's missing, sometimes we can look upon it with a sense of sadness if you think that what's missing is important for you. But once you understand just what real freedom is, every time something is missing, you feel just so happy. You're free of another burden. In the sense that every time you're carrying something around, it's just so heavy. It's just like so many rocks in a backpack on your back, which you've been carrying around for such a long time. And the spiritual path is like emptying out that backpack so you can travel lightly and free. Tomorrow I'm traveling to Melbourne. I have my bowl and my little bag. That's all I travel with. And I see all these other people, and they're going for a much shorter journey than me, and they're carrying so many suitcases. You see them at the check-in counters, weighing them, and they're always overweight. Trying to argue and trying to cajole the person checking them in not to charge them for extra. For me, I'm never overweight, I'm always underweight. And isn't it wonderful? I feel so free when you don't carry so many things, so many bags. And sometimes you ask, why do you need to carry so much? We're not talking about bags at the airport. I'm talking about the bags which you carry around in your life. All the worries and concerns which happen to you. Just the last time I went overseas, I said, I'm not sure if it's still going on, swine flu. And I look upon it, yeah, so what, I'm not worried about these things. And when I was in Thailand, I said, it'd be wonderful if I get swine flu, because then you get into quarantine. And if I'm in quarantine for a week or two, that's like going on a meditation retreat. I won't have to give any talks, I won't have to do any work, they'll put me in a nice room, they'll give me nice food, and they'll be very kind to me, they'll leave me alone, I can just meditate for all day without having to do anything. Yeah, bring it on. So for me, whatever happens, you can always see that it's the worrying which is the problem, that's the burden. So we try and empty our mind of those things and be free. You see already in this talk so far, emptiness and freedom, they go together. Things and complications, that's the opposite of freedom, that's the opposite of emptiness. And so after a while you get the hang of the spiritual life. understanding freedom doesn't come with more things, with more memories, or with more plans. This is a problem which we have. We always assume that if we work out the past, keep thinking about it, keep finding out what went wrong or what went right and why it went wrong or why it went right, we'll have a sense of freedom. But no, you actually get more caught up and burdened by all those extra possessions. And worse, we always assume that if we plan or work out where we're going to go and how we're going to do it, that we will have a secure future. And again, that is missing the point, as I said in the meditation, that now is the only time you have to make your future. Your health is made now. Your happiness is built now. Even your prosperity is being made right in this moment. Those people who really are concerned about the future, when you think about it, you're messing your future up. Be thinking of the present. That makes you so empty. Empty of concerns and worries about where you're going to go, what's going to happen. That's why a monk is so free. We have empty minds. In the same way we have empty huts. I was joking to the monks that sometimes we say, what should we call you? Should we call you Ajahn, or should we call you Venerable? And most venerable, when you go overseas, they give you the title of most venerable. But no, that's not what you should call a monk. If you want to address a monk, you should call them your emptiness. And if they're a senior monk, no, the most emptiness. And if they're an enlightened monk, your ultimate emptiness. Why do people laugh at that? Because they think emptiness is a bad thing. But in spiritual life, the emptiness is a beautiful thing. The more empty you are, the closer you are to enlightenment. A long time ago, this Sri Lankan monk used to visit here. He was a great monk, Ananda Mangala. I remember, this was 26 years ago when he came here, and someone asked him, straight up, are you enlightened? And he said, no, I'm not enlightened, but I'm highly illuminated. What a beautiful answer. Not illuminated, eliminated. So it's getting close to emptiness. So these things, when you think you feel empty inside, great, you're getting close to enlightenment. Bring it on. A lot of time is because we're not used to emptiness. Too often we had too many things around us, too many people around us, too many, this wife, this husband, kangaroos, and those things which we thought were giving us happiness and security, when they start to disappear, don't look at the loss or what's been taken away. Look at the extra freedom which you have. The freedom is the path to happiness. Things burden you. Emptiness gives you freedom and liberation. So as we understand the emptiness more and more and more, we can actually incline towards a more empty life. And trouble is, though, people say, I'm empty, I'm nothing to do. And sometimes in our society we think that you're a failure, there's something wrong with you. Such a shame. I remember when I was very young, you know, you sit around and what are you doing? I'm doing nothing. And you got into trouble for that. What's wrong with just doing nothing? Instead of always having to do things and fill up your time with activities. You're having a weekend coming, Saturday and Sunday. What are you going to do this weekend? Is it always activities? Or can you schedule in a little bit of emptiness time? What do I mean by emptiness time? I mean sitting around and doing absolutely nothing. Not watching the TV, not listening to music, not reading a book, but doing nothing. Empty time. Some years ago, someone told me that they love sitting in their garden, just doing nothing. And I asked them, what do you mean? Oh, just, you know, reading a magazine or listening to some music. That's not doing nothing. And I said, look, if you are going to have a garden, and many of you do have gardens, how many of you spend time in your garden, just empty time, doing nothing? And how many you only go in the garden to work? You work during your Monday to Friday. Now you work sort of cleaning up and cooking. Can't you have some time in your house where you have empty time? Just go and get a seat and sit in the garden. And as I say, watch the trees grow. Trees do grow, you know. You just have to be very patient and very still to watch them. There they go again. You don't have to do things all the time. And that means empty of doing. You find that that's very hard for some of you because you've got out of the habit. Our society has said, this is what I heard, because, you know, it came from a Christian society, the devil makes work for idle hands. No, it doesn't make work for idle hands. The devil makes trouble for idle hands. I don't know, whatever it says. Anyway, idle hands were supposed to be bad for you. And we just got really stressed out because we always have to do things these days. Wouldn't it be wonderful just to have an empty time when you just make your mind empty, time empty, and just have some freedom from having to do things, having to work things out, having to think? You can only find freedom in empty moments when you haven't got anything scheduled. The trouble is, most people, in order to have that space, that freedom, think they always have to get things out of the way first of all, and then we can have some freedom and emptiness. To get the cleaning done, the cooking done, and all the other jobs which you have on your list done, and then you can have some peace. And of course, you all know that the jobs are never finished. There's always something more to do. And the only people who rest in peace, where were they found? Yeah, you know where. They're found in the cemetery. It's too late by then. So if you really want to enjoy emptiness, it doesn't matter if you've got things to do. Give yourself a few moments of peace and stillness. Place emptiness at the top of your priority list. Not doing things, but doing nothing. The beautiful nothing state of emptiness. And then one can actually feel the beauty of this emptiness. And you find that in that freedom of stillness, of emptiness, when nothing is going on, there you find this amazing sense, which is counterintuitive, of fulfillment. When you're always doing something and going someplace, you're always lacking something. But in stillness and emptiness, it seems everything is full. It's just like when you do get into the present moment in meditation. In the present moment, there's no time at all. At the same moment, there's everything. You have all the time in the world when you're in the moment. Because you're not pressured. Time is no longer a problem. You're full. And it's the same with this quiet, still, empty mind. In that emptiness, you're full. Just like at the top of the pyramid. In that emptiness, there's total freedom. And this emptiness surrounding, embracing everything. That's why it's beautiful. What this means is when one appreciates what emptiness truly is, then when you lose things, it's not a problem anymore. When you have something, you appreciate them. When you lose them, you can let them go. How can you let them go? What's the trick of letting go? It's appreciating the freedom of emptiness, of having few things. And again, the mental possessions. The more still, the more empty you become. Also, the more happy you become. The sense of energy and joy comes in. Because the more stuff which you have in your brain, in your mind, in your past, in your future to worry about, the more energy it takes. The energy which is lost by having things and doing things and going places, that is what really runs us down. which stops us being peaceful, which stops us being happy. Even today, somebody came up to me and said that they came last Sunday for our Waisak ceremony. And on they were so inspired, but on the way home, somebody backed into their car. And they said, usually they get so upset that some stupid person messed up their car and gave them all this extra business to do to get quotes and repair everything. But they were so peaceful and happy, they didn't mind at all. That's actually a common experience for people. When you really get tense and you're tired, small things make you very angry. They just push you, as they say, over the edge. But when you've had some peace and stillness, abided in emptiness and got the joy of peacefulness and stillness for a while, when these things happen to you in life, you can take them so easily. It's not a big problem anymore. You only fall over the precipice when you're close to the edge for a long time. When you've moved a long way from the edge because you've had a bit of peace and happiness and stillness and emptiness in your life, then people can't push you over the edge because you're such a long way away anyway. I notice that most of anger in this world comes because people are always living on the edge. They're always just so tired. They have no slack, as it were. They've got no... Any last thing, one more thing, will push them over. But when you have more peace in your life, more calmness, and more energy from the empty mind, you will find that you have more resources. You're softer. Your mind is not so brittle that things will hit it and it won't break so easily. This is actually the benefit of having some peace in your life. It overcomes the grumpiness and the anger and all these other things which cause so much problems for you, your family, in your business, in your life. So in order to overcome the anger, the irritations and the problems which anger and rage give in this world, wouldn't it be wonderful just to have a bit more peace and stillness so we can actually basically take more without going over the edge, because we live a long way away from the edge. Giving people a little bit of stillness and peace will help there. So as we grow in understanding of the value of emptiness, it means that we don't have to have so many attachments and possessions. We become more free, which is what we want to feel. An empty mind is always something which can welcome something new. If you have a full schedule, it's very hard to find time to receive something new. The more full we are, the less emptiness, and the less emptiness means the less receptivity to what's happening. Even in one's wisdom, one's understanding. Sometimes I went to this conference recently over in Bangkok, and there was all these professors who were doing PhDs on Buddhism. And I remember just the reason why I left academia a long time ago, going to Cambridge and getting to know some of these professors. I found they knew so much but understood so little. There were some Nobel Prize winners, but they couldn't live with their wife without having arguments. There was people who were just big lecturers, but were suffering so badly when their wife died. I think all your intelligence, can't you learn about life and use that wisdom to have some peace in your life and be able to accept the ups and downs in life which happen to each one of us? Why is it there that you're so full of knowledge but empty of wisdom? And this actually, I think, was one of the great things about Buddhist teachings, especially my experience with like a teacher like Ajahn Chah. He'd only done 4 years at school, but he was far wiser than these Nobel laureates I knew at Cambridge, because he knew about life, having an empty mind without any concepts and ideas. He could actually hear and listen and respond with more sense of freedom. And I've used that empty mind in many times, especially as part of my job was like talking to people and counseling people. Whenever you have to go and talk with someone and it's a difficult conversation or it's something which could be very sensitive, I've known, I've been taught this. Have an empty mind where you have no plans of what you're going to say. You don't know how you're going to respond, but you keep your mind empty. Because when you have empty of all these thoughts and plans, it means you're free to respond to the moment as it happens. Instead of always thinking, I'm going to do this, I'm going to say that. To be really wise, you have to be spontaneous. And spontaneous means you don't have plans filling your mind. You have an emptiness there. That freedom to respond appropriately to the situation as it arises. I don't know if I told this story. Yeah, I don't think I have, but please forgive me if I did. Thus, I'm talking to the monks. I said, I prefer to actually to talk to elderly people rather than young people. Because elderly people, they forget my stories and jokes very quickly. So I can repeat them next week without them realizing it. But this lady, she was a counselor over in Sydney. And she got an email or a letter, I don't know which, from this woman over in United States who was dying of many types of cancer, anxiety disorders, psychosis, I think you name it, she had it. It was a lady with everything, and sometimes you do find in California, but the wrong type of things. And she heard of this counselor over in Sydney and asked for an appointment. She was going to come all the way from California to Australia just to see this one woman. So this one woman was smart enough to know that there's so many therapists and counselors of all types and all traditions over in a place like California. Why is she coming to see me? And she realized that the usual way of dealing with problems would not work. She'd been there and done that with all the other counselors and therapists in California. So when this woman came into her room, she had no choice but to empty her mind. Empty her mind of everything she'd ever been taught, of any plans of what she was going to say, of any strategies, empty her mind of all the rules. Only then could she listen to this girl. And she said what happened was amazing. When this elderly, very sick and dying woman came into her rooms in Sydney, this counselor opened her mouth and said, she said she just came from nowhere. She didn't know where these words came from. She said, I think you should start practicing the violin. Strange thing for a counselor to say. But those words, the elderly woman from California broke down and cried and wept and wept. Because what had happened was, when she was very young, she'd loved playing the violin, and her mother had stopped her, saying that someone from such a wealthy, high-class family doesn't need to play a violin. You will have to learn other skills. So she was stopped from doing something she'd loved. It was a symbol of the repression which she'd felt growing up in a wealthy family. And just touching that with an empty mind and being able to be sent enough to actually to see that and to say that just was a wonderful expression of the power of emptiness. What happened next, the next words which came out of this counselor's mouth was, instead of worrying about your sickness, you should do some social service. And the thought which came out from that emptiness was, why not go and read books to children in the Burns wards? Kids who will be in this ward, this isolation ward, for many months. Go and take a book and read to them. The woman went back to California and did exactly what was told. Picked up the violin again, even though she was supposed to be dying of cancer within a couple of months. Started an organization which went into many hospitals in San Fran, LA. Reading stories to kids suffering from burns. She lived for another 3 years, I think. It was a wonderful therapy. The woman had actually touched something which no other therapist had touched. Because she wasn't coming from what she'd learned or what she'd been taught and the theory and the rules. She'd come from an empty place. And as far as Buddhism is concerned, it's from those empty places that we can see deeply into the nature of things. Whether it's a problem with that person in front of us, whether it's our own problems, whether it's the problems of life. When it's things in between, they block us seeing clearly. In the jungle, you can't see great distances, you can't see deeply. Only on top of those pyramids, when there's nothing there, when there's pure emptiness, can you see so far and so accurately. Which is why whenever there is a problem in your life, don't go filling the mind up with thoughts and ideas and plans and knowledge. See if you can empty it. And be still. Suspend all the things you've ever been taught and known. And maybe in those emptiness, you can see so much deeper. And you do. So many people, when they've been meditating on retreats or at home, have found solutions to their personal problems, or even deep problems in life, not by thinking about them, but by going to that beautiful emptiness and seeing deeper. But not only the emptiness as a tool to solve problems in life, but the beautiful emptiness, the freedom, the space to relate to other human beings. I've often said, sitting here, when our life is just a relationship, the relationship that you have with the people you meet, the relationship you have to your body, the relationship you have to the things which happen in life, the relationship you have to your mind, the relationship you have to this moment. And one of the beautiful, skillful means of living a successful, happy, enlightened life is realizing it's what you put in the space between you and the other is what determines happiness, growth, success. It's not about you, it's not about the other, it's what's going on in that space, what's between you and the other. And there's many things you can put in there. Sometimes you can put fear when you're meeting another person, and you can see you put fear between you and the other person. If it's an enemy, you can put ill will between you and the other person. A skillful person at least puts kindness, peace, compassion between you and the other person. So when you look through them, to them, you look through compassion, look through peace, it changes the whole way you relate to other people. But of all those things you can put between you and the other person, the best thing you can put there is emptiness. Nothing at all between you and the other. And then there's a coming together. The best thing to put between you and life is emptiness. So there's no barrier between you and life. Not even peace, not even love, but emptiness. When you get your head around this and into it, this is actually where you get a sense of being at one with things. When there's anything, even like positive things, between you and the other, there'll always be a separation. When there's absolutely nothing, there is a coming together. So even those of you who have been struggling with things like meditation, why not put some emptiness between you and whatever you're experiencing? And then you'll find that what you're experiencing and the experiencer do come to a sense of oneness, a singleness of mind. There's nothing that separates you. Putting that sense of emptiness between you and whatever you're experiencing is a beautiful way of getting to incredible deep states of stillness very, very quickly. And having a mind which goes to the very peaks of emptiness. Remember what I said about what emptiness feels like. Just like on the top of the pyramid. Nothing between you and the infinite. The infinite looking at you, you looking at the infinite. Infinite. I'm not talking about a god or anything. I'm talking about just nothing. I know that sometimes that people say, well, where does this all lead? It does lead to freedom. It does lead to a sense of unencumbered joy, happiness which doesn't depend upon others or things, a freedom. But I can't resist sort of telling one of the tales from my life as a monk with the great master Ajahn Chah. He was always talking about emptiness. In Thai he would call it wang, wang, emptiness. And there's one occasion he tried to enlighten me. The occasion was towards the end of his life. Towards the end of this great master's life, when he was getting sick, his Western monks, we decided to build him a sauna. For those of you who think that saunas came from Sweden, even in the ancient Buddhist texts, there was one of the buildings which was allowed in a monastery, coming from 2,500 years ago, had saunas in India for people's health. So because it was traditional Buddhist, and because our teacher was sick, we built a sauna in our monastery. And he would come every week to take his sauna. But because we were caring about somebody else's health, because we were making good karma, we got a lot of benefits from this. Because every time he came to visit us, he gave us a beautiful Dhamma talk, a beautiful instructions about meditation or about truth. And on this one occasion, he gave a very, very profound talk. And if you have heard a very profound talk, and it very much inspires you, you just want to sort of sit meditation afterwards. And that's what I did. I sat in a very deep meditation, so inspired, so peaceful. When I came out afterwards, I didn't know how much time had gone past. But I decided it would be a good opportunity now to go and see if I could help my teacher. Maybe just hand him his towel or help him after his sauna. But I was too late, because as I walked towards where the sauna was, I saw him coming in the opposite direction. He was coming with two lay attendants, two Thais. We were going to pass on the road. And he'd seen that I got into very, very deep states of stillness. Because sometimes these great monks, they can look at you, and you know they're reading your mind. You know they're going right inside of you to check you out. And so Ajahn Chah did check me out. And he realized I was open, open to being enlightened. So he looked me in the eye and said, Bama Wangso, why? He asked me the magic question, why? And I replied, I don't know. I was a very young and stupid monk. I tried my best. And one of the wonderful things about these great masters, when you do something stupid, they just think it's hilariously funny. They just laughed. And he laughed at this stupid Western monk, but then he straightened his face again, he looked at me again, and he said, Brahma Wangso, I'll tell you the answer. He's one of the great monks of the last century. He said, I'll tell you the answer to the question, why? And this is coming from a great master, the answer to the question why. He said, the answer to the question why is, there's nothing. There's nothing. Emptiness. And then he looked me again in the eye and said, do you understand? And I said, yes. He said, no, you don't. But that was a beautiful experience, which I always remember. The answer to the question why is emptiness, is nothing, nothing left. Because only in that nothing can there be beautiful freedom. and the end of things. Whenever there's something there, there's no freedom. There's always an obstacle, a burden to carry. The answer to the question why, there's nothing. Do you understand? No, you don't. So when sometimes people say, you Buddhists, what do you believe in? I say, nothing. What do you mean by nothing? Just this beautiful emptiness, this freedom. There's nothing left. Now that's where we get into the deeper states of understanding about what Buddhism is. Go into the very deep emptiness inside. The last simile, I'm going over time. The last simile is, again, one of my favorite ones about the subject of emptiness. And again, it's, I usually only tell these similes on retreats or to monks, so now I'm just going to share them with you. And this was the story of the driverless bus. Because that's what life is like sometimes. Like going on a journey. Going on a bus journey. And on your journey, sometimes you have some very wonderful times. And sometimes some very difficult and painful times in your journey of your life. How do you react to the happiness and suffering of life? It's like being on a bus and sometimes you go through some very beautiful surroundings. And other times you go through what I call the toxic waste dumps of life. So painful that you tell the bus driver, get out of here as soon as you can. Put your foot down on the accelerator to get out of these unpleasant experiences. And sometimes your bus driver actually slows down. And the painful experiences of difficult times last longer than they should. So you get very upset at your bus driver. And sometimes when things are going beautiful and well and happy in your life, sometimes you tell the bus driver, slow down. I want to enjoy these moments, the beautiful pleasures and happiness of life. And does your bus driver slow down? Often. He puts the foot on the accelerator and speeds up. So the unhappy, the happy times, they don't last as long as they should. And the painful experiences last longer than they might. You're out of control. Things aren't going properly. So you come to a center like this to try and learn how to have more happiness and less suffering. How to speed up through the unpleasant parts of life and linger on the pleasurable and beautiful times. And so in order to do that, you've got to find out who your bus driver is. Who's running your life? Who's your driver? So you can tell your driver how to drive the bus with more happiness and less pain. And in the spiritual path, especially the path of meditation, when you go deep inside of yourself, you come to what I call the bus driver's seat to find out who this bus driver is so you can teach them how to drive your life better. It's at that point where you get one of the most wonderful shocks of your life when you find when you get to the bus driver's seat, you find the bus driver's seat is empty. There's no one sitting there. There's no one driving your life. The will, that which runs you, is just the empty process. The empty bus driver's seat. The driverless bus. And once you get that type of insight, there's a huge consequence. Then you just go back to where you were sitting all along and you stop complaining. Why complain when there's no one to complain to? That's the end of craving. Yeah, nice territory, unpleasant territory. It's all par for the course. It's the complaining which causes the worst pain. When you realize the simile of the driverless bus, your bus driver's seat is empty. Then you stop all this craving and all this controlling and all this worrying, and all this guilt, and all this anger, and all this fear. You're just on a journey, that's all, in the driverless bus. So sit down, shut up, and enjoy the ride. Thank you for listening. Okay, are there any questions about the talk this evening on emptiness? Yeah. Okay, you said that when I said the talk was going to be on emptiness, you thought it was going to be on non-self, not just on physical emptiness. It did start on physical emptiness, but then it moved on to the emptiness of anatta, non-self, especially the very end. The driverless bus, the empty seat, that's what anatta is. When you feel there's no one in control, but that which you take to be your will, to be you, is just a process. It's a process which is determined by many causes and many conditions. At my monastery in Bodhinyana, I once gave a talk and it was entitled, Why Ajahn Brahm Tells Silly Jokes. And the reason it was given that title was because it's not to do with me, it's just because my father told stupid jokes. And so I'm totally conditioned. I've got no choice in the matter. So I don't feel upset or embarrassed. So that's actually what I get. So we find out the will is not to do with you. It all comes from something outside. This is what anatta is, the emptiness in deep inside. And many people get scared of that at first, but after a while it becomes very beautiful. Does that answer the question, sort of? Yeah, okay. Okay, thank you. Yes? Oh, yeah, okay, yes. There is nothing. I've got to be careful because I've one of my rules that if I give away any attainments, then I break one of my rules. But of course you understand what's going on with that emptiness. There's nothing there. You ask the question why, there's nothing. Sorry? I'll explain it. Okay. So, one of the explanations is a simile of like the thousand petal lotus. For those of you who've ever understood some of Tibetan Buddhism, the famous mantra, Om Mani Padme Hum, that means that basically we worship the jewel in the heart of the lotus. Mani is the jewel, Padme is in the lotus. And what does it actually mean? It means that sort of the lotus closes up at night time when the sun goes on the outermost leaves, it starts to open up. And more you go to the center of the lotus as this flower opens layer by layer. And the idea is to find out what's in the center of this lotus. And you know the simile, you are that lotus. What's in the center of you? So you've got to open up all of these things and go in the middle of things to find out what's in the center. And that's the whole path, the spiritual path. You go into the center of time called now. You go into the center of silence. You go into the center of the body, which is the breath. You go into the center of the breath where you find the mind. You go into the center of the mind where you get the jhanas. You go into the center of the jhanas. You go right in the very middle, and right in the very middle you find the jewel in the heart of the lotus, who you really are. And what's that? Nothing there. Emptiness. That's the jewel in the heart of the lotus. Ah, what a relief. I don't have to carry anything ever again. That makes sense? Do you understand? No, you don't. A little bit. Okay, so that's what we mean about the beautiful emptiness. Remember, some people are scared of this. In the same way, they're scared of having like a shelf without anything on. Why? Why do you always have to have things in order to feel that you are somebody or that you're complete? Why do you have to have a partner or kids to feel that now you're complete? Why can't we just be free? Why can't, when you get a kangaroo given to you, you brush off everything else and put the kangaroo there and enjoy that? When somebody gives you something else, brush that off and put something else on there. Isn't there a more beautiful way to spend a life? Being empty.